With today's final launch of the space shuttle, we turn the page on a remarkable period of America's history in space, while beginning the next chapter in our nation's extraordinary story of exploration. From the early exploits of Daniel Boone, Lewis and Clark, and Robert Peary, to the breakthrough journeys of Alan Shepard and John Glenn, Americans have always been a curious people, bold enough to imagine new worlds, ingenious enough to start to chart a course to them, and courageous enough to go for it. And the gifts of knowledge and innovation that we have brought back from the unknown have played their part in the building of our more perfect union. Some say that this final shuttle mission will mark the end of America's 50 years of dominance in human spaceflight. As a former astronaut and the current NASA administrator, I want to make clear that American leadership in space will continue for at least the next half century because we've laid the foundation for success. And for us at NASA, failure is not an option. Over three decades, the shuttle has brought this nation many firsts and many, many proud moments. It has helped the United States to maintain its leadership in space. It has vastly increased our knowledge about launch systems, which we'll apply to the next generation of space transportation. It opened the door to space for men and women of all races. It united our globe with communication satellites and helped us learn how to repair them in orbit. It launched science missions and brought the hundreds of research experiments to the International Space Station, which will be the centerpiece for our human spaceflight activities into the future. I know the transition from our flagship program to a new chapter in human spaceflight has not been easy. Change never is. I want to thank the NASA workforce for its dedication and professionalism. What you have accomplished continues to amaze the world, and we've only just begun. Tomorrow's destinations will inspire new generations of explorers, and the shuttle pioneers have made the next chapter of human spaceflight possible. President Obama is asking us to harness that American spirit of innovation, the drive to solve problems and create capabilities that is so embedded in our story and has led us to the moon, the great observatories, and to humans living and working in space. That American ingenuity is alive and well, and it will fire up our economy and help us win the future. Thank you, and Godspeed to Atlantis and her crew.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to a very joyous day, the STS-135 post-launch news conference after the successful launch of Space Shuttle Atlantis today, before near-record crowds in the Space Coast area. I believe that we have 1,535 news media here in attendance, and it looks like we crammed as many of you folks in the room as we possibly could today. Thank you very much for coming. We would like to begin things with by introducing the members of our panel, and then we'll have opening comments, and then we'll be happy to take your questions. To my immediate left is Mr. Bill Gerstenmaier, NASA Associate Administrator for Space Operations.
Good afternoon.
Bob Cabana, Kennedy Space Center Director.
Hi.
Mike Moses, Space Shuttle Program Launch Integration Manager and the Chairman of the Pre-Launch Mission Management Team.
Good afternoon.
And Mike Leinbach, Space Shuttle Launch Director.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Mr. Gerstenmaier?
Thanks, Mike. What a truly awesome day today. We got to witness something really, really special and something really amazing. And you may think that sometimes I talk about the hardware, but I'm really talking about the teams and the people that supported that launch that just occurred. What you saw is the finest launch team and shuttle preparation teams in the world that got this vehicle ready to go fly. You got to see the team perform everything we've asked them to perform over these years. The vehicle had a tremendous launch. The teams worked flawlessly, even the last minute to hold at 31 seconds. They worked through that with tremendous professionalism and got this launch off today. So just congratulations to the KSSC team. I can't thank you enough for everything you've done for us. Everything I've asked this team to do here at KSC, they have done, and they've done it superbly and beyond my highest expectations. So thank you to the KSC team. The JSC team and the ISS team, they've still got to get busy, as well as the crew on orbit. The docking will be on Sunday. It's a pretty busy mission. You'll see that activity on orbit that we're going to go through. We're going to try to extend the mission probably an extra day. They'll work that through the mission management team as things go on. But I urge you to follow the mission and watch what's going on with what is going on with ISS and really take in and spend a little extra time to understand the research and the activities that are happening on ISS. And then we look forward to a landing here at KSC. So again, still a lot of work in front of us, but what an awesome and great start to the mission today. So again, thank you, and I look forward to your questions later. Bob?
Thanks, Bill. First off, I want to thank Bill Gerstenmaier for the leadership that he has provided human spaceflight from NASA headquarters. He truly has done an outstanding job. And John Shannon's not here today, but John, I can't think of a finer program manager for the shuttle program to close it out and see us get this last vehicle on orbit. And of course, last but not least, I want to thank the two Mikes here. I think they did a truly excellent job leading the team through this last launch, and we got a little dicey there a couple of times, but we found our way through it, and I'll let them talk about that. It truly was an awesome, spectacular launch. In my opinion, the only way it could have been better is if I'd have found a way to stow away on there somewhere, but unfortunately that didn't work out. I want to share with you what I shared with the launch team after the launch, and Bill kind of said it, but words can't express the gratitude I have for this team and the pride that I have in them. They are truly the most professional, the best, most outstanding technicians and engineers anywhere. And we owe them a great debt of thanks. They have just done a truly outstanding job in service to our country, and they've provided us with one heck of a ride for the last 30 years on the United States shuttle program. And they really need recognition. We're going to be going through a tough time. Change is hard, and we're going to have more folks walking out the door here in a few weeks. And, you know, they were and are performing their job absolutely flawlessly right up to the end. And that says a lot for them. It speaks to that professionalism. Change is difficult, but you can't do something else. You can't do something better unless you go through change. And all this talk about, you know, NASA's adrift, we don't have a plan. We do have a plan. We're enabling commercial space. We have the Commercial Crew Program here at Kennedy, supported by the Johnson Space Center in Houston. We have four folks under contract trying to build a vehicle that will take Americans to space, supporting our International Space Station that's still up there until at least 2020 with Americans on board, a human spaceflight program. And yes, we have to rely on rides on Russian rockets for a while, but we're implementing those plans to get a commercial U.S. capability to get our folks there. And we're working very hard on a heavy lift program that will allow us, again, to explore beyond our home planet. If you look out to Pad B, you know, you see a shuttle structure on Pad A, but let me tell you, Pad B is in a lot better shape than that shuttle structure. And even though you see stuff coming down on the top of the pad, what you don't see is what's inside. All new fiber optics, all new digital control systems, a new lightning protection system that even helped us clear the shuttle down on Pad A for the lightning strikes that we've had. State of the art. So a lot of progress is being made to prepare for this multi-user capability at KSC, a multi-user launch complex, where we can have a heavy lift program that allows us to explore, and commercial programs also. We announced the MPCV as Orion to go on that big rocket. That hardware starts arriving here at the Cape later this year for the first test article. Soon we'll have an announcement on the exact architecture of the rocket to go along with that. And so we are making progress. We're doing all that we need to do to help move us forward. So, you know, the shuttle program has been truly phenomenal, and I take great pride in this team and thank them for all they've done. We still got a lot to do before it's over, and they're going to be doing a lot of work on orbit, and then we're going to bring them home safe, and I'm looking forward to that landing back here at the Cape and shaking their hands after a great mission. So to all of you, thanks for your support, and we are going to get through this, and we're going to do well. But awesome launch today. Mike?
Thanks, Bob. Let's see. After years of training to tell me to do things in the right order, I'll do something in the wrong order here. I'm going to start up my remarks by telling you, Mike tells you a lot that he leads the best launch team in the world, and I'll include that to the ASCEND team back in Houston, and they are truly the best. It is an honor and a privilege to serve with you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate
the judgment they showed today, the leadership they showed today was absolutely amazing. So let me get back on track before I lose it. I'll talk about technical stuff, right? Because I'm good at that. So you saw these guys really perform. You know, it started yesterday. I don't even know what time I was getting ready to take a nap, and they called up and said we took a lightning strike pretty much on the pad. And the team had that cleared within about 4 hours. We knew we were good to go, press on with the count. We still had to do some data review, still had to dot some I's and cross some T's. Echoed that to about 2 years ago when I first, about 2.5 years ago when I first started, we had a lightning strike. About that same time frame, made us delay 24 hours. Play that back about 2 years before that, we had a lightning strike that made us delay about 2 days. So it really shows you how well the team takes the challenge of recognizing that there's something we're not quite the best at, and we'll go become the best at it. And we really showed that with the lightning strike clearing. The decision to go tank today in face of that weather forecast with the odds we had against us all day and for the weekend, I thought was unbelievable leadership as well to take us down that path and let us try today. And it really did pay off. Mike's team worked a couple of good technical issues, a LOX pump acting up a little bit. And then just to make it really exciting, at 31 seconds, the Gox vent arm. I'll let Mike tell you about, again, that was a great example of how well the team had prepared ahead of time. And then we just worked that weather all day long. And we ended up coming right down to the wire. The range weather hung right in there, was pretty good all day long. We really had the advantage of having the weather recon aircraft up there to go slice up the clouds to truly find out how thick they were, where they really were, look at where showers were popping up and not. And when it came right down to it, we end up right up against our RTLS rain shower rule, which says we don't want rain showers within 20 nautical miles of the landing site, the SLF, the shuttle landing facility. And on this day, we had a few showers that were still popping up in that circle. So we were, at the time, needing to go, we were observed no-go at the landing site. But that's okay, because RTLS landing wouldn't be for about 35 minutes after launch. But we were also going to be forecast no-go. And that's where we needed to talk about maybe taking a little bit of an exception today beyond what's printed in the rules to say we understand the situation a little better, because this situation is not one that we wrote down ahead of time. And that's what we did. The team did a very thorough evaluation. The ASCENT team, led by Richard Jones back in Houston, and our weather recon aircraft with CJ Storkow flying and all the team that supports them, did an amazing job of really talking about what conditions we were truly facing. We knew we had some showers that might pop up, but they would be limited in scope to only affect one end of the runway. We had good energy profiles that would let us land on either end of the runway so we could redesignate around a rain shower if it did pop up. Really, when you're flying through rain showers, you're worried about losing a lot of your energy, and we knew through calculations that even if we had that, we had an excess margin that would be okay even if we did happen to catch a rain shower at the bad time. But really, what made us go today was the radar forecasts, the radar maps, the forecasts, and the observations by the STA pilot that showed there was really nothing developing down in the quadrant that would then blow up over the pad. So we knew we might have a tiny risk of a chance of a shower. We knew very well it was not going to be a thunderstorm, and that allowed us to be comfortable today to just go a little bit beyond the printed rule and take that extra exception at the end and go ahead and launch today. Proved out, I kept an eye on the radar map as we were flying uphill all the way through RTLS landing time. There never was a shower that popped up in the circle, and it was a really good decision by the team today. Had no problem endorsing that one. On the way uphill, we got a DPDT alarm, which is a delta pressure over delta time, basically a change in pressure. The cabin pressure dropped off just a tiny little bit. We attribute that to cabin stretch. If you think about it, as we're lifting up through, the cabin grows a little bit because of all the G-forces on it, and it just vents off a little bit of oxygen. Pressure was very stable after that little bit flip, so no worries. But it did ring alarm on the way uphill to give the crew yet more excitement on this last mission. They got in orbit. Miko was right on target. Ohms 2 was perfect, and they're doing a really good job. The doors are open now, and we're really looking forward to a great mission. As Bill said, this is a very critical mission for station resupply. We're going to do our best to try to stretch out an extra day to help get some stowage on station cleaned up and in good shape. And this is really going to posture the space station to be done for the future. So I think the shuttle program is ending exactly as it should. We built the International Space Station. We're stocking it up for the future and ready to hand it off. And we finished really strong. That said, we're not ready to look back or forward. We still have this mission to complete, so we're going to stay very focused on the mission at hand. A 12, hopefully 13-day mission in front of us that's going to be jam-packed, and we're handing off to the team over in Houston to get that executed. So with that, I'll hand it over to Mike and just say I can't express again how proud I am to be sitting up here after a good, successful launch today.
Good. Thanks, Mike.
Well, thanks for those opening remarks. That was very nice. And on behalf of the KSC shuttle launch team, I accept those remarks. They're very nice. Mike talked about the decision to go tank today, and it, he made it sound like it was a tough decision. Let me tell you how that really came down. We met in my office before the MMT meeting, and we flipped a coin. That's how we really make decisions. No.
It's got a big dartboard.
It's a big dartboard. You know, now the program's over, we can divulge some of our secrets. We met before the meeting. We went over some strategy, and then the forecast was such that, you know, we had a decent shot at it. And as we've said before, we've tanked with worse predictions than that. And so we went with it today, and we got lucky. I mean, we got lucky is the way you can put it. From a launch weather perspective, Kathy Winters, our launch weather officer, did an outstanding job, and the folks appreciated her on console. Joel Tumbiolo and Mike McAleen, an outstanding job today, guys. Thank you very much. The forecast for the launch perspective was right on the money, and we got that little bit of clearing that we needed. And so from my perspective on the launch side, it was pretty easy. Richard Jones, on the other hand, the flight director, wrestling with the RTLS, that was a bit more challenging for him. And he worked his way through that, and it was just an outstanding job. So we got through all that, and the tanking went fine. We had a little bit of an issue with our LOX pump, the major pump that puts the liquid oxygen into the external tank. We're getting a little bit of a chill down on that pump, indicative of a very minor leak, and so we opted to sort of voluntarily switch to the other pump before we got into trouble on that one. That went per the book. Never uncovered the eco sensors or the depletion sensors in the tank at all, and so we were good there too. And so the LOX guys did a great job. Coming on down to the count, I thought we were in the clear until 31 seconds when the Cox vent arm gave us a little bit of trouble. And all that was, folks, was when we retracted the GVA, we didn't get one of the indicators that it was back and locked, and we have procedures in place to go verify visually that it's back. And indeed it was, and there's enough hydraulic pressure in that system that we were not concerned at all with the GVA coming back out during a main engine ignition. So no issue there. Team worked through it very, very well. I think we launched with 58 seconds left in the window this time, which is an eternity lately. And so that worked out really well for us. And just on behalf of the launch team and all the thousands of people here at KSM, just very, very proud that we finished as strong from a launch perspective as we did. Again, the mission ahead of us, landing ahead of us, and then we'll be able to look back and celebrate. Today was a great day, and there's a party in the VAB, so I hope you don't ask too many questions. And so with that, Mike.
Yeah, that said, go ahead, Bob.
I was just one real quick before we take questions. I think you all know Rick Sterko, a Marine, was flying the weather aircraft, and I was listening on the loop. And instead of using really technical meteorological terms, he put it in Marine terms, like I am, so that we could all understand. He said it's a really, really big hole.
All right, we will take questions. These gentlemen have been working since around midnight, and their day is not done, so we do want to let them get out of here by 2 o'clock at the latest. So we have about 30 minutes worth of questions, unless they nudge me and say they have to go sooner. To try to make sure everybody gets covered, please ask one question and a follow-up. Please make sure you wait for the microphone. Tell us your name and affiliation and to whom you're addressing your question. And we'll start in the front row with Seth Bornstein.
Seth Bornstein, AP, from Mike Leinbach. Can you describe sort of the mood after launch, you know, in the launch control? Did it take longer for people to file out since it, you know, it was the last one? You know, how was it different than after other launches? Can you just describe what was going on there?
Yeah, you hit on it very good, Seth. It did take a while to leave the control room. We had photographers set up to take some pictures of the team, the entire team at once, and then individually or group pictures, whatever we chose to do. A lot of us walked around and shook everybody's hand. People, it seemed like we didn't want to leave. It was like the end of a party, and you just don't want to go. You just want to hang around a little bit longer and relish our friends and what we've accomplished. So it was very special. A lot of pats on the back today.
And just to follow up, either Mike, you talked about all the tiny technical problems you overcame. In the end, are you kind of glad that it was, instead of a completely clean count, which I know is easier, is it more sweet that you had to overcome all these things and yet still launch, or would you have just assumed had a nice, easier, clean count for you?
And anytime we get to a T0 and we get to orbit safely is good by me. So it was fine. It challenged the team a little bit at the end, but we've practiced that scenario numerous times, and so we were ready to go with it. In fact, we had written a little special procedure because in some of the testing of the Gox Ben arm over the last month or so, we didn't always get that retract indicator. So we put together a little procedure, and we put the procedure together figuring if we do that, we'll never get that failure. Well, of course, we got the failure. And so we had it knocked today. That was no big deal.
Leo Enright with Irish Television. Just a question about the RTLS waiver. Would you have done this if the shuttle was going to fly another mission? The reason I ask being that it was always my understanding that one of the concerns was that if you flew through precipitation, that it would damage the tiles. And I mean, I'm just wondering, were you just making the calculation that, well, hey, we're not flying it again, so that sort of tile damage doesn't matter, or am I completely misunderstood?
No, that actually, so last mission type thing was not part of the consideration today, but you are right, flying through rain showers will damage the tile. And so the rule's not written because you damage tile and then therefore it's a turnaround maintenance issue. The rule is the damaging of the tile literally is taking energy out of your profile. You remember the shuttle's coming in as a glider without engines. Every last little bit of energy is well managed to make sure you make the runway. We knew today for the approach profiles with the wind that we had, the headwinds, the crosswinds, and the brake energy we would see, that we weren't going to have any energy problems. So losing a little bit of energy by flying through a rainstorm would be okay in today's situation. Just like you see with the forecasts, and we were talking pre-launch, no single forecast is the same. A 70% no-go one day is not the same as a 70% no-go the next day for different reasons. Those rain shower exception rules are the same thing. They're written for certain cases, but not every case. So we take a look at each one every time. It's one of the reasons we have people making these rules and not just a computer voting red or green to go or no-go. So, and did not come into consideration today at all.
Jim Siegel, Celebration Independent Newspaper. A question from Bob Cabana. You mentioned, Bob, some of the work being done on Pad 39B. So looking forward now, when would you anticipate that work is going to be completed? What missions do you think are upcoming for that pad? And what about 39A? Is that going to kind of just stay where it is for a while for budget reasons or what?
Well, we're obviously preparing to be able to launch a heavy lift rocket off that pad as soon as possible, with our goal being 2016. Now, how things work out in the budget process, you know, we'll have to see. That doesn't look feasible right now, but we want the pad to be ready to go. So we'll progress ahead to have it ready as soon as we possibly can for accommodating NASA rocket launches off it. 39A, you're right. We don't have funding right now to move with it, so we're going to kind of put it in a caretaker status eventually as we explore beyond our home planet. There are scenarios where we need two big launch pads to support two big rockets to go do some of the things we want to do. So down the road, we do see a need for that pad. In the meantime, we'll make sure that it's not in such a condition that we can't bring it back up when we need it.
Okay, over here, Ken Kramer.
Hi, Ken Kramer for Space Flight Magazine. Mike Leinbach, well, first of all of you, I just want to say congratulations and thank you, okay? And if you're wearing a very elegant medallion there, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about it.
This is a little flag that I gave the launch team today. It's a STS-135 Prime launch team member. And I just wanted to give them something they could take with them and remember the good times, and so that's what this is about.
If I could just follow up with Bill Gerstenmaier, what is your reaction to these significant cuts to the proposed NASA budget by the House Appropriations Committee?
Again, I think it's too early to react to those cuts. Right? This is what we've seen from the House. We'll get some discussions with the Senate, and then eventually that'll get worked into what the NASA bill is. So I don't react to those. We understand what they mean. We understand the tough environment, and we'll work with that, and we'll watch the process go through, and we'll be prepared to execute with what we get when we finally get an answer from Congress.
Mark.
Mark Kirkman, Interspace News. Obviously, I don't ask feeling questions normally, but this time I would like to. And in particular, I'd like the perspective of the whole panel, but in particular the two mics. In my view, there's kind of no other place where you can where you see the flight control teams and the launch teams, the way when they're on their game, there's nothing like that to see them perform, whether it's simulations or a real launch. And I'd like you all to reflect on the fact that no matter what follow-on program you get, this animal is never going to exist before. This is the last time you're ever going to see that kind of execution. And just your thoughts on that.
We have grown into a very cohesive team throughout the whole shuttle program, not just the flight control team, the launch team, but all the processing team, the designers of the missions, you know, the payload folks. It's a very, very cohesive group. I'm not sure we'll never see it again. We have grown into a very, very good organization, and it's taken years to do that. But that doesn't say it can't be done again. In fact, it will be done again. It has to be done again. What we have learned in the shuttle program, in part, is how to work between centers, and you split the work up. Certain organizations are responsible for certain things. You respect that. And you go about your business and work together as a team. And it seems very natural to me to work this way. And so I'm sure it will happen again. There's no doubt in my mind.
And for me, I'll steal a quote from Gene Kranz, who calls the Control Center a leadership laboratory. And it really is that. It trains people to be critical decision makers, communicators, and leaders. And so while we aren't going to be churning out from that laboratory for a little bit. We have a whole batch of folks that are going to go out and seed both commercial industry and private industry and the NASA team and go push the envelope and take what they've learned and the skills they know how to do now and go help us keep moving to the future and to our future goals. So from that standpoint, I feel good that we're going to go take this team that's excellent at what they do and go out there and save the world, so to speak. And we will be able to rebuild that team when the time comes, and we need that again. But yeah, in the short term, I know exactly what you mean, Mark. You've been there, so you recognize that it's in the short term, it's going to be something missed. That a chance to do that every day.
Okay,
right here. Randy Siegel, WSTU Radio for Mike Lineback. Mike, you got the sash from Endeavor. You got the sash from Discovery. Did you get the one from Atlantis? And did you say anything special to the team after it was all over, realizing the finality of where we're at?
It's almost like we planted you in the audience. There's Atlantis. What I said to the team today, there's been a tradition in American manned spaceflight that the launch director has bid the crews farewell, the astronauts farewell on launch day, traditionally with good luck and Godspeed. And the definition of Godspeed that I like the best is have a prosperous journey. And so at the end of my speech to the launch team today, I wish them from the bottom of my heart good luck and Godspeed.
Okay, Tarek.
Thank you. Tarek Malik with space.com. I have, I think, one and a follow-up. First, for the two mics, I know that during a launch, you're fairly busy, and maybe you get only a few seconds to get a look at the actual ascent. I'm just wondering, when you did get a peek, did it shine brighter at all? Did it feel like it lasted longer? Was there anything different that set it apart as it was happening and as you were looking?
No, Tarek, you put the words in my mouth for me. To me, it looked like it was lifting off in slow motion. I failed to apologize like I did the last time that we didn't give you a big enough view, but for a long enough time before we hit the cloud deck. But to me, it definitely hit slow motion there for a good 10 seconds. It was very moving. It was very beautiful.
It was special today. I remember standing there after the vehicle went into the cloud deck. You could still see the smoke from the SRBs and the main engines and the first stage, and it seemed like that cloud plume just was growing and just hovering and slowly drifting north. And Bill Dowdell, a good friend of mine, the payload launch manager, I believe I'm right when I say we put our arms around each other and just looked at it and said, you know, we will never see that again. It was a special moment.
Greg, or Tarek, I'm sorry.
I just had one more follow-up, sorry, for Bill. You mentioned the same message that Administrator Bolden did in his recording about the U.S. not pulling out of human spaceflight. I know there's been a lot of talk in the public about that perception because of the lack of an iconic vehicle like the space shuttle, and I'm just wondering how you perceive the challenge to kind of combat that perception in the months and years ahead before the gap is complete.
I think one piece that we forget is we've created this unbelievable facility in space, this 16-partner, 900,000-pound research facility in space. And we've got to really maximize the way we talk about that and the way we use that facility. You know, we've got a chance to do unbelievable research in a facility that we've never been able to do. This is a unique period in our lives to get that done. So we need to do our level best to take advantage of that. And then when you talk about the flight teams, there's still a flight team on the ISS side that's managing 17 launches to that vehicle every year. They're juggling cargo manifests, they're juggling research manifests. We're looking at establishing a new nonprofit organization to manage the national lab portion of that ISS. So we are still in space and we are still moving forward with the ISS. You're seeing commercial cargo come online later this fall and next spring. You'll see commercial crew come after that. So we're ready to keep going, and we're going to springboard off of what the shuttle has done and move the next 50 years and make them just as bright as these last 30 have been for shuttle.
Greg.
Greg Dobbs from HDNet Television. And this is for the two mics, because you're the guys on this group who spend the most time around the shuttle. It's a more highly technical question than Tarek's first question, but did you choke up?
Yep, most definitely.
Yes.
You open it to follow up.
I'll choke up if I do.
Elaborate on why you personally choked up. You're engineers, and you're always just, you know, analyzing things at every stage of ascent.
To be honest, I choke up at every launch. This one, I choked up before launch, which was the unusual thing for me. But again, as an engineer, as whatever, I can't see how anybody who comes down here and sees a shuttle launch doesn't choke up and just swell with pride at seeing that thing go. It just does it to you every time. Okay, in the pink.
Marcia Smith, SpacePolicyOnline.com. To Bob Cabana, you talked about the future of the pads, but not about the VAB. Do the commercial guys want the VAB? Does NASA need the VAB? Does it get an uplift or does it get bulldozed?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think there are folks who would shoot me if I thought about doing anything other than refurbishing it. Our plan is to refurbish Complex 39 to make it a multi-user spaceport, and that includes utilizing the VAB and the other facilities that are out there. We're partnering with Space Florida and commercial companies through Space Act agreements and use agreements to try and bring commercial work here. But we most definitely need that VAB for the heavy lift rocket that we're going to build to support launches out of Complex 39 that take us beyond Earth. So absolutely, we're going to continue to make it a viable part of the future. And that includes some refurbishment. So we're making the most of the downtime, the transition between programs. Fortunately, we only needed one shuttle pad, so we were able to get a jump start on 39B to start transitioning it to the future. And we need a little bit of downtime in order to make the modifications and transition from one program to the next. And that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, go ahead, Marcia.
I won't ask you how much it's going to cost, but will the government have to bear all those costs, or will those be shared with the commercial sector?
If the commercial companies are going to use it, they are going to have to pay to use it.
Irene.
Thanks. Irene Klotz with Reuters, for anybody who'd care to take this. You all inherited a vehicle that was ultimately proved far more complicated and labor-intensive to work on, and one of the goals that the shuttle program didn't meet was this low-cost reusability, reliability. I guess I'm just wondering why you think it took 30 years for the shuttle program to get to the point where it would stand down and give perhaps another operator, commercial, or some other version of government an opportunity to develop something that would actually meet one of those goals that the shuttle program was sold on.
Is that for me?
You can.
The shuttle program, we could not have built the space station without the space shuttle. And, you know, it is a phenomenal achievement on orbit right now. So, you know, I look back on what the shuttle's done in 30 years. The Hubble Space Telescope, Magellan, Ulysses, Galileo, the probes, you know, it is, the shuttle opened up space. When you look back on the Apollo and prior, look at the makeup of the astronaut corps and look at it today. Look at the diversity within the astronaut corps. Look at the multi-nations that have flown to space on the space shuttle and what it's done. I don't think it ended early. I think it totally fulfilled what it was was meant to do. Did it deliver on the costs that some people said? No. But did it achieve something that was not achievable by any other country or any other vehicle? Absolutely. So I think it's done a phenomenal job.
LaGrange, oh, go ahead.
Do you think that the commercial companies are going to have an easier time of developing vehicles that non-astronauts can fly in, I guess is what I was kind of alluding to, with a simpler design?
Well, yes, but they're not going to be able to do what the shuttle did. The shuttle was designed to carry large payloads to orbit, to carry large crews to orbit, to stay on orbit for a long time, to service vehicles in space. A capsule is designed to go somewhere, drop somebody off, and bring them home. And is a capsule a lot easier to build? Absolutely. That's why we chose the Mercury capsule. You know, NASA was working on lifting bodies when the space program was starting out because that was really the best way to go back and forth, you know, to have some cross range, to land on a runway. But they needed to do it quickly and cheaply. And a capsule was the simplest, easiest way to do that. And it still is. And so we've been going back and forth to low Earth orbit for 50 years now. We ought to be able to define the requirements for somebody to build a capsule that allows them to take people up to the International Space Station and back, and not just the International Space Station, but, I mean, Boeing has a contract with Bigelow Aerospace. You know, there are going to be other destinations. Commercial space is not just a government contract to the space station. It's got to be more than that.
And I think also the shuttle program gave a lot of information that's going to be tremendously valuable to these programs that are emerging and coming forward. You know, a lot of our computational fluid dynamics, some of the things we understand about boundary layer transition on the vehicle, how the vehicle flies, those kind of things are still important to capsules, how life support systems are designed inside the capsule, how docking mechanisms work. All those things that we have really kind of proven and refined throughout the shuttle years, we can hand those off to the commercial companies and they can pick those up and move those in another direction. So I think there was a lot learned from the shuttle program that will become, isn't immediately evident to you until you look behind the hardware and you look at the equations and some of the physical understandings of how we fly in space that actually have 100% application to this new activity we're heading off to.
In the green shirt.
Hi, Dave Mosher with Wired.com. So you guys have a mission in space now, and this is for anybody who can best answer it. What is going to be a really key moment up there, aside from getting the astronauts safely on the ground? What's going to be sort of a tensest moment, the main objective that you want to get done before you come home?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a lot of just logistics activity, and that's just moving cargo from the multi-purpose logistics module into the space station. This is the heaviest MPLM, multi-purpose logistics module, we've flown, so it is really packed full. So there's going to be just a big kind of logistics activity of moving that activity from the module. Then also, space station is getting pretty crowded. There's a lot of things up there that are stored that need to come back. This is a unique time to bring unique components back, so you'll see us fill the MPLM up. That's why we really would like to have the extra day on orbit. We also have a pump module that's failed on the outside of space station. It failed a little bit earlier than our analysis has shown. We would like to return that pump module to understand why it failed so we can improve the next generation. And then we have another experiment that's going up. It's a refueling experiment that will sit on the outside of station. And this fall, we'll be able to use the Canadian dexterous robot to actually do a mock demonstration of servicing a satellite that was never meant to be serviced. So it has on the outside of it an interface that looks just like a satellite that's in geosynchronous orbit. We've designed unique tools for it, very much like we designed unique tools for the Hubble servicing mission, but now this robot will use these unique tools. It will cut the blanket away, it will remove a panel, it will remove lock wire, remove a cap, and then actually demonstrate fluid transfer between two tanks on board. So it's going to take us now from the spacewalk generation to start showing us what we can do in terms of robotic activities on board space station.
Okay, back on the other side of the room.
Yes, hi, Matt Pavlidich from the Radio Network New Zealand. Thank you, gentlemen, for today. I think it'll be with us the rest of our lives. The initial ascent of Atlantis did look, to me anyway, slightly slow, like she was strutting, perhaps. A question and a follow-up for Bob Cabana. Pad 39A, as has been mentioned, is in the past, the present, and the future going to be a working launch pad, but are there any plans to have any significant extra commemoration plaques, what have you, for that pad in the coming future? And also, when Atlantis returns home, are there any special ceremonies that you have up your sleeve that you perhaps cannot tell us about yet?
Well, actually, I'm working with the shuttle program to come up with some commemorative plaques to put in some various places, both at the shuttle landing facility and at the launch pad. So we'll have something to commemorate the history of those pads as well as the landings at the at the SLF, and we've got a couple of ceremonies coming up after landing, something special for the KSC team right here participating in the landing, post-landing. But we're going to have a big celebration, and I can't remember the date right now, but it's going to be out at our visitor center, and it's going to celebrate the entire shuttle program, and it's going to be open to easy access to all the retirees, the folks that have been a key part of this program for the last 30 years, so we can really celebrate the significance of what the shuttle has accomplished. And that's going to be on the 13th of August.
Andy Cox with the Weather Channel. It seemed today like the weather gods kind of conspired to let both the teams kind of show their mettle. You guys talked about the SMG work and the RTLS stuff and 45th work in the range stuff here. I wonder if you guys could maybe speak to the bigger picture of what the weather teams have meant just throughout the course of the program, the support they've given.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I'll let Mike add in too, because he works with Kathy a lot in the 45th, and we're only singling out Kathy because she's the spokesman for that team usually. But the SMG guys, we're talking about the future and looking ahead. It's amazing when you work down here how much we need the daily weather forecasts for every operation we do. We're outside at the pad. We're moving hardware back and forth. There's cargo coming in at the SLF. We need weather forecasting on a daily basis. And in fact, Mike has a daily weather call where we tag up and see what's coming. And so it's played an integral part of the space shuttle program and the space program. And it's really built up an unbelievable capability. I was just explaining to a few folks the other day, not too long ago we had had flight rules in place that talked about triggered lightning. We learned that lesson the hard way through some of our partners over on the Air Force side, where they had an event with a triggered lightning that took out an Atlas, and a bunch of new rules came in place to talk about what the limits are. And we have field mills on the ground that measure voltages from lightning and kind of help tell you whether you're going to get triggered lightning or an impending lightning strike. But we didn't know what was really happening at altitude. And so combination with the Weather Service, the Air Force, NASA, and NOAA, we flew a project to basically fly airborne field mills. We used to have a rule that any attached cumulus cloud, if it had lightning in it, if it was attached, you'd be no-go. So we could have a cloud deck that stretched over the Gulf of Mexico with lightning out near the middle of Mexico, and we'd be no-go here for that. And we learned through these rules that it's probably about, and I can't remember the numbers exactly, but it's a 20 to 30 mile type of radius effect. And so advancing the state of the art there really, really paid off. And I think we got that because we had a dedicated team focused on dedicated weather in certain areas of the country. You learn so much when you look at weather in one spot that closely. And so I really hope that seeded itself throughout the rest of the country in weather forecasting and weather service too, not just for the shuttle program, but it's an unbelievable team. We could not do what we do without them.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I do have a daily weather call with Kathy Winters, the launch weather officer. And as Mike says, she's just a spokesman for a large group of people over the 45th. Different things come into play on daily processing versus launch. Different things come into play when we're talking about tropical systems. We work very closely with the National Hurricane Center when we have a tropical system threatening us. We've had criteria to roll the shuttle off the launch pad to get back into the VAB to protect it. And we've done that in the past. Weather here in Central Florida, the lightning capital of the world, right? There's a group of people, the Lightning Launch Commit Criteria Group. It's a group of PhDs, been together for over 25 years. And through those years and the studies they've done, like the airborne field mill that Mike mentioned, we've been able to relax our rules, but yet stay perfectly safe. And so we're constantly challenging the weather folks because we have an operation to perform. but we need to do it safely. And so it's a balance between those two competing interests. Weather in Central Florida is a very, very interesting phenomenon, and you saw it today. It could have easily turned very, very sour, and we wouldn't be talking to you right now. So a little bit of luck never hurts. But the relationship we have with the 45th and SMG and the other folks that support them is just outstanding.
Right, we have time for unfortunately only three more questions, so we'll take one here, then Todd Halverson and Ralph Vardabedian from the LA Times.
Thank you. Jackie Goddard for the Times of London. Over the last couple of years, and right up to last week, really, we've seen certain harsh criticism spelled out by some pretty heavyweight NASA veterans, Neil Armstrong, Chris Craft, Gene Cernan, and the letter last week to Charlie Bolden. How, if NASA can't convince some of its own finest, how do you think NASA will move forward to convince the public that NASA is still an agency that knows where it's going, what it's doing, and that it's worth doing?
Well, I'll start, and I'm going to let the head of human spaceflight at NASA add a little bit more to it. But I think as it becomes clearer and we announce the specific design of the rocket that we are building and how we are going to use it and why we chose that design, I think that's going to help tremendously in educating and helping folks understand what we're doing and why we're doing it.
And I think also there's a piece of it that, you know, we've got a lot of detail plans that we've been working, you know, in-house quietly with technical teams, really building a pretty strong strategy of how we go forward. And they captured a vision of NASA that was in the past with a different set of teams, and they haven't had the privilege of being brought in and understanding all the details that the technical experts are working on a day-to-day basis. So we'll reach out to them and make sure that we get the briefings to them and they can understand what we're doing. We'll listen to their opinions. We'll see what makes sense, see if we miss something. I think when I grew up under those folks you mentioned, those are my teachers. Those are my mentors. I lived in Houston with them. I consider all of them truly my mentors. So I think I've incorporated everything that they bring to us in terms of concerns, but I think we owe them to show them technically what we've done and how we're prepared to go address these issues that they raise. And I think after they see that, I think they'll come to an understanding of where we're heading. They may not particularly like it because they want to push in a further direction. They know what this team is capable of. They see what we can go do, and they want us to do even more. So they are pushing us as hard as they can on the outside. So a piece of that is healthy, too, to have a good, strong debate that we can keep pushing and keep trying to do more. And we are, you know, this team is really ready to execute whatever this nation wants this team to go do. This team can go execute.
Todd Halverson.
Todd Halverson of Florida Today for Bill or Mike Moses. With the end of the shuttle program and maybe more specifically the end of ISS assembly, I'm wondering if either of you see this as an end of a golden era in spacewalking.
I don't see it really as an end. I see it really as it's a transition, right? You know, and unfortunately, sometimes we can't do, you know, we say we can multitask, right, as a people, but sometimes we can't multitask as well as we think we can. You know, you feel like you're multitasking, but are you really as efficient as you were? Or are you just doing three things that actually take you longer than if you would have done those three things individually, right? So in a way, we had to really quit assembly to really get focused on this research pace and to get this activity started. And we've got a nice window. We've got a nice 9-year window where we can really concentrate on this space research. And then that shows that there's potentially an economic market. There's now potentially a commercial application for space that's not government-driven. So then there's a unique window here where now it's not only individual governments pushing us into space, but now there's a real commercial pull towards space. And that can really springboard us and move us in big directions. So I don't see this necessarily as an end, but I see this as a transition into another era. And at the same time we're going to be doing the ISS research, we're going to be building the heavy lift launch vehicle. the capsule we've talked about, the Orion MPCV, that's going to allow us to get beyond low Earth orbit to go push those boundaries to really challenge us as a human race to go out and explore with humans to new destinations. So I don't see this as an end of the golden era. I see this as a chance we can leverage off of what we've got now and really push it in new directions. And it's up to us to make sure we explain as best we can to the broader community, the non-space folks, why we are doing what we are doing. Why have we dedicated our lives to this? Why are we doing all the activities we have done? We need to convey to them that excitement in this small window so they can get excited with us and then move with us into this next phase of spaceflight.
Ralph.
Thank you. Ralph Artabedi in LA Times. The last question is, a lot of federal agencies have gone through ends of eras of very technically sophisticated programs and have worried about the loss and atrophy of the know-how and knowledge that extended back decades. And they've gone through processes of formally documenting that technology and knowledge. And I'm just wondering now at the end of the shuttle era, whether you're concerned about preserving and being able to tap all of the knowledge, the manufacturing art, the operational knowledge that you bring to this table, and how you're doing it and whether you're concerned about it. Thank you.
Pretty extensive lessons learned program where we try to document exactly, you know, what we've done. We do it through video archives. We have a database that's searchable. We have all kinds of multimedia activities to try to capture the knowledge. But then I think another really effective way to transfer that knowledge is to move some of the people from one activity or one program to that next program so they can take the actual lessons that they have learned and applied themselves, and they get to then go apply it to the new program. You know, if you look at our history, you know, a lot of the ISS team came from the shuttle program. So they got to take all those hard lessons they learned in the shuttle program that are really internal lessons now that you're not going to read in a book or you don't have to search in a database, and they can actually apply them in the next application. So as we knew that do the new designs of these launch pads, we knew that do the new designs of the new launch vehicles, we're going to try to capture and move people that have experience in the shuttle world into those areas so they can directly apply the knowledge and the skills that they've learned in the shuttle program to the new activities going forward.
So you're not really concerned that you're going to have any atrophy or loss of knowledge?
I think I'm concerned. I mean, we need to watch out for that, right? But what I've described to you is the way we're going to try to prevent that. So I think it's naive to say we've got it well in hand, because this is a very difficult thing to do, to how you capture this knowledge and how you pass it on. We are trying our best with all the right experts and all these techniques I described to make sure we go do it. Time will tell how well we've done it, but I think it's critical for us to try to make that move and make sure we capture it. But it will not be easy for us to do.
Okay.
Can we see Mike's sash one more time?
They would like to see Mike's Atlantis sash one more time. And while, Mike, you're displaying that, I just wanted to let everyone know we're going to close today by replaying another launch of Atlantis on television for you. We also will be replaying a very special farewell tribute video from the closeout crew before they broke down the White Room for the last time. Then we'll turn things back to Mission Control in Houston for STS-135 continuous coverage. You can keep up with the entire mission at www.nasa.gov/shuttle. Now we'll roll video. Thank you very much.